Welcome one and all to the Stock Up Podcast, your one-stop shop for stocking up on the information you need to qualify for the Pro Tour. Unfortunately, none of us qualified for the World Championship ever, but that is what we're going to be covering today. We both have watched lots of World Championships. How was watching it this weekend, Jacob?
It was good. Yeah, I got to watch a lot of it live, had to go back and watch some of it in the evenings, but pretty cool to follow it. Congrats to Seth winning again.
Yeah, congrats to Seth. Congrats to the folks that played. For those of you who don't know, Jacob actually kind of almost qualified for this tournament.
Yeah. I lost day two of the last Pro Tour to Derek Davis.
Yeah.
Who made top eight of Worlds. And if he didn't beat me in that last round, he wouldn't have qualified for Worlds. And I would have.
He took your slot. Were you rooting for or against him?
Kind of for him. He seems nice and seems like he's been playing well.
Oh, you're such a good sport. I can't drag it out of you. Yeah, so I watched too. It was fun. A little bit unexpected field. It's always weird with World Championships because this one was 128 players, just about. Was that right?
Yeah, it was. That's how many were qualified. 126 showed up.
Gotcha. Okay, so 126 players, and a lot of the players team up in these sorts of events. They team up, or they already have been on teams because of a lot of the players that are on teams do well at Pro Tours. Go figure.
Yeah.
So the deck selection ends up being a little more homogeneous in small tournaments like this, but it was especially the case here. I will go ahead and pull up our metagame share that we had for the tournament. So we got 18%. Is it Lessons? 16% Teamer Otters, and then if you look a little bit farther, there's some more Is It decks. So what did you think about all this, Jacob, when you looked at the...
Yeah, so Teamer Otters was super on my radar. I actually kind of just looked over a list of somebody that was qualified for this event, mostly at their mana before the event, though they didn't even up... People on their team registered Otters, but they actually played Jeskai Control, Adam Brace, who I'm teaming with for the next Pro Tour. But... I wasn't surprised by a lot of Teamer Otters. I guess maybe I wasn't sure if that was going to be the most played deck, but, you know, it kind of is a good Cub deck, and I think that deck is pretty good against Demir, and makes kind of sense if you thought the Simic Herboroid deck was going to be popular, because it kind of does some similarly explosive things, but then has a combo finish. So, you know, I think Herboroid is this card that kind of goes out of control and is really hard to handle without a sweeper. But like the other alternative to playing sweepers is to effectively deal infinite damage or something, which Bant Airbending does as well. So that one, I guess I was surprised so many people played it. I saw, you know, it's had some minor success before the event, but, you know, I'm not sure you can magically just play a Bant deck in Standard when you hadn't been able to for so long before, I guess, is what I'd say. The mana is really questionable on that deck. It's about to get Temple Garden and Hollowed Fountain, so I think it could be another contender again, but I was definitely pretty surprised to see like that many copies of it. And then certainly Lessons out of nowhere. And this 23 is kind of two different flavors of Lessons, where you have the Artist Talent Monument to Endurance versions, but then you also have versions like what Derek Davis played that are just playing the Lessons package and some of the more typical prowess stuff on top of that.
Okay, so this 23 players, this is an example of what I was talking about, right? Where a couple of big teams,
you know, it's kind of funny because it's not that hard of a deck to build. There's not very many flex spots once you add all these Lessons to your deck, but to actually have played the games and determined that it was the best thing, it makes sense because, you know, we talked about this in our top 10 and we put Accumulate Wisdom on your honorable mentions. And even though I included Gran and Boomerang Basics, I mean, Boomerang Basics is seeing play in, you know, decks that aren't Lessons. So that's its own kind of power level going on. But, you know, you are required to just put like 20 plus Lessons in your deck for these cards to work. And a lot of them are removal. So if removal is not very good, or the red removal specifically is not very good, then that certainly can be a problem. I will say for a lot of these decks, including Lessons and Otters, very funny, but Screaming Nemesis was like kind of a nightmare for Otters, and I imagine it would have been a nightmare for Lessons as well. So that ban, I think, is a huge improvement for this type of deck.
Yeah, there's not a lot that punishes the pretty efficient red removal out of these Izzet decks now without Screaming Nemesis. I know before, you know, Vivi and whatnot had to play things like the enchantment that, you know, one in a blue, turn something into an O2, give it no abilities, and sideboards for matchups like that. But just being able to rely on your red removal is really nice. It's funny, the Temur Otters thing, I kind of had no idea that that would be a popular deck. And as we said, touched on them in our set review, in our top 10 list, or top 10 episode. Since then, I had started playing with the cards online, and I found that they're quite good, to the point where I actually pre-ordered a large quantity of Boomerang Basics and Accumulate Wisdoms. But I had sort of the thought that, like, well, these are really good, but probably they're going to be budget-friendly, so they're going to go up from a quarter, or they're going to be good when Strixhaven comes out. I didn't really think they'd be an immediate Tier 1 presence, so that's pretty cool. I actually built, I'll show you really quick, the deck I built that I was playing before Worlds, which was my Lessons deck.
Yeah, and I saw some, you know, content creators had built some Lessons decks too.
Yeah, it's a pretty simple thing to arrive on. It's really just like what you decide to win with. It's pretty clear that you want to use like Boomerang Basics and you know, well, all the playable Lessons really. And then once you play with Grand Grand, you realize that's pretty good. Storm Chaser's Talent's really good with Boomerang Basics. The interesting thing they found, of course, was the talent and the monument.
Yeah, and I tried to guess to what people might be playing before Worlds. And Talent Monument was definitely on my radar. But also, I was thinking, you know, the Legend of Karak is like a pretty powerful card. And a lesson that plays really well with it is Octopus Form.
Okay, sure.
So I was curious if anybody was going to do that, but it didn't seem like they did. I saw there was like two Octopus Form registered in the tournament. I haven't even found who did that. But it's kind of tough because it's not very good with the kind of small one drops like Grand Grand and talent, Storm Chaser's Talent, that don't really need protection, which
ends are so cheap. Mostly right. Played. Yeah, the Legend of Karak is a really good card, though. It playing both of these, the Legend of Roku and the Lesson of Karak, has made me realize that maybe the Legend of Karak is just better than Legend of Roku, which on initial read, I figured the blue one would be kind of unnecessary since blue has other card drawing and it seemed pretty slow. But the flip side of Legend of Karak is just quite good, where the Legend of Roku is okay. But let's see. So to go over one of the Izzet Lessons deck in particular, this is Seth Manfield's list. He did win the tournament. This was also the list that was essentially shared by his whole team, which is the Channel Fireball / TCG player team. Yeah,
Which and, is a team of 10, which is already a huge, you know, portion of the tournament. It's kind of fun looking at all their lists after just teaming with them to see like what they disagreed on or things like that, because I don't know if any of them even registered the exact two same 75s.
I noticed little differences.
Lands, 22. Seth, I think, was the only person to register three Boomerang Basics. I don't know if I'd call it crazy, but because I will say, so if we're going to dive into this deck a bit, it's the deck I've been playing a lot now.
I was going to ask if you tried it. I've tried it a little bit. It's really fun.
Yeah, I mean, it feels really strong to me. I've already kind of heard of some rumblings of things that can compete with it. Kind of funny, once again, people have come up with mono red decks to kind of contest this deck. With Scalding Viper and Razorkin Needlehead, which, you know, a deck full of removal, you'd think you can kind of shrug those off, but that deck doesn't really play blockers. So, you know, this mono red deck just coming out with a ton of creatures, including one drops, that you also have to use your removal on because you don't really play anything that can block their one drops. I think it's just pretty taxing on the removal. And ultimately, I think the Lessons deck is a control deck. It's not very fast.
Yeah, tell me a little bit more about this deck and kind of how it works.
I would call the Is It Lesson deck, or the Is It Lessons deck, with the one CFB played. Almost a better name for it would be like an Artist Talent deck, which is just a super unique card in general that when it first got printed in Bloomborough, it kind of found its way into the Pioneer Is It Phoenix deck as a 4 of, although not at first either. The first like RC that it was legal and people found out they should play it, but maybe only played 2 or 3 copies. And now eventually people have realized they should just play the full 4. I've also played it in Storm and Modern, and I really like it there. And in Modern and in Standards, the level 2 part of the card is, I think, really important. The non-creature spells you cast cost 1 less to cast. Which I think really is just like, when I play games with this deck or against it, this is the card that the deck is really about. And, you know, Monument to Endurance is, you know, you have Abandoned Attachments and Gran-Gran and I guess an Ogna-Kella, but this card, Monument, really is not very good if you don't have Artist Talent. It can be sufficient at doing the right things if, you know, your opponent has spent a lot of resources or time answering Artist Talent or doing other things in the game. But yeah, for the most part, Monument to Endurance is kind of, it's actually like the Otter's deck. It's kind of like Valley Floodcaller almost to me, where like, yeah, it can do something, but you really need the Artist Talent in play before this really starts doing a lot. But then it gets kind of out of control, especially just, you know, getting 3 modes a turn or sometimes 3 modes on your turn and your opponent's turn, especially if you level talent and your spells are discounted and you're getting like 1 treasure per turn cycle from the Monument too, or not turns, 2 treasures per turn circle. Can really add up really fast.
Okay, so this is sort of like a blue-red control deck with this engine in it, and you're trying to assemble the talent, or the Artist Talent specifically, in the Monument Endurance. Why is Storm Chaser's talent in this deck? It doesn't seem to fit.
Yeah, no, it's definitely strategy. Just like some generic pressure, and it's good with Boomerang Basics, of course. But I was going to mention, playing a lot of mirrors, I've adapted a strategy of, I've been boarding out my artists or my Storm Chaser's talents, a couple Grand Grands, some of my removal lessons. I kind of have an overly dense sideboard for the matchup because I've played so many mirrors, including like 2 Rowls and 2 Stock Ups. So, you know, as the meta shapes, what I'm doing right now might not work out if the lessons deck gets less popular, which actually I think it is already. Not that I think it's a weak deck, but I think, you know, in an ideal world, this deck doesn't have to be a Storm Chaser's talent deck, but it is a little awkward with Boomerang Basics to not be. And also, if you ever play against like a blue-white or Jeskai control deck, I think Storm Chaser's talent is like one of your strongest cards. I would say level 2 is a bit clunky on Storm Chaser's talents. It's not really how you want to spend your mana obtaining cards. The enchantment that makes a 1/1 prowess that you can bounce with basics is kind of totally reasonable, though. I wouldn't call it like bad in mirrors, but I just am trying to approach having, I guess, like a really next level plan in the mirror. And I think not having Storm Chaser's talent is going to be part of that. And I've noticed other players are doing the same. And so if, you know, hypothetically, if this talent deck was super, or this lesson deck was super broken and everybody was playing it, I could see this deck evolving into not playing any Storm Chaser's talent at all, or sideboarding them or things like that.
Okay. Do you think you would still end up with Boomerang Basics in your deck?
Maybe not 4. Maybe like a couple. So I've also found, you know, the mirrors are really about Artist Talent. I mean, maybe not even the mirrors, just playing against this deck in general. It's really about Artist Talent. So being able to bounce the talent and counter it on the way down, or just bouncing it to buy some time, is kind of a huge deal.
This deck is blue and red, and it generates a ton of card advantage. So I've just found just having a 1 mana card that can, you know, tag any of your opponent's expensive permanents into their hand is really nice.
The cards I want to replace Storm Chaser's talent with would also still be card advantage. Specifically, you know, like an example, like just a mix of Stock Up and Rowl.
Rowl seems actually decently good against this deck because the red spells don't hit planeswalkers.
Yeah, Planeswalkers are certainly somewhat of an angle of attack, but they also, you know, you need to handle what this deck is also doing. But I think if you can interact with this deck, with Artist Talent specifically, I'd say, and also, you know, not get ran over by Storm Chaser's Talent, Boomerang Basics, or not let the Grand go unchecked, then from there, a Planeswalker is one of the best ways to kind of close out the game against this deck. And like I said, it's kind of a control deck, so finding a win con that it can't really just kill is pretty nice. But, you know, anything, if you're just behind against this deck, is really not going to work because of, I think, the Boomerang Basics. You know, people have pointed towards the Dimir midrange deck being kind of good against this deck, and I've only played the matchup once, but what ended up happening is the card Kaido is really good against this deck, but the rest of their deck is kind of terrible against this deck. You know, they can't really get rid of a talent or a monument if you stick it, and they play a lot of small creatures that die to your red removal, and Enduring Curiosity specifically, you know, just can get exiled by Combustion Technique, so that's kind of a disaster. And when I played against this deck, they Kaido'd me, and I just played out, you know, my talents and monuments and stuff, and eventually bounced the Kaido on my turn, and it wasn't really an issue, because if you assemble that engine, then you're just completely happy to play Boomerang Basics as one mana bounce an opponent's thing.
Yeah, this deck's kind of amazing in that the lessons really provide quite the removal package and also a card advantage package with Accumulate Wisdom. This is sort of the big payoff where you're, you know, the joke is that you assemble Essential Recall with Grand and a fully powered up Accumulate Wisdom where you can get one blue mana instant, draw three cards. One thing that's going on with this deck is because you have to have a certain amount of lessons in your deck to make it function, you're playing a few suboptimal cards. Abandoned Attachment, certainly not a terrible card, but it's, you know, not amazing. And then looks like Seth has an It'll Quench You. If for those of you who are looking at Seth's deck and wondering, I mean, he's got like It'll Quench You in your sideboard and also another Abandoned Attachment. So I'm assuming these are just so he could board them in when he has to board out some other lessons in matchups where they aren't optimal and still keep his lessons count high.
Yeah. And then actually Seth might be the only person on the team that didn't include Price of Freedom in the sideboard, which I actually just heard Nassif and Edgar talking about. That's the one in the red lesson that destroys an artifact or non-basic land in opponent's control. They search their library for a basic land and you draw a card. And, you know, when I first saw that in the sideboards, I thought that seems so terrible against artifacts, you know, to give them a basic land, even if you draw a card and even if it's a lesson. I was kind of surprised they came to the conclusion to play that card. But actually the reason some of them played it was because the airbending deck was playing one basic, and actually some people, including Javier Dominguez, registered zero basics. So they were actually playing it to target lands and still be a lesson.
Okay, interesting. You know, so Bant Airbending was also a highly played deck this term. It was the third highly played deck, 12% of the field. We could take a look at one of those lists now. I know it was sort of, it's an exciting deck because it has a combo, of course.
Yeah,
so here is Javier's, yep, Bant Airbending.
Yep, so for those that don't know, if you control Doc Arlok, things that you airbend cost zero, basically. And you can alternate playing Aang Swift Savior and Appa Steadfast Guardian to flicker each other. And the Appa can also flicker other things you have, basically. Or, you know, airbend them, but you recast them for zero. So essentially flicker. And when you cast the Aang with the Appa in play or anything else you airbended with Appa, you'll get 1/1. So you make infinite 1/1 white allies in the process. And then on top of that, if you happen to have played Aang at the crossroads, then you can use that infinitely as well to go and find any creatures in your deck and put them into play or airbend them, notably. Also, with Badgermal Cub, you could infinitely earthbend the same land. So if you have an untapped land, you could attack for infinite right then. Also, the Aang Appa thing, those two cards both have flash, so this can be done at instant speed. But I'd say, if you had Aang at the crossroads in play while doing this, what you can do is keep, like, play it with Aang Swift Savior airbended, and you can find more Aang Swift Saviors. And we see here Javier even had one Aven Interrupt remain. You basically can go through your whole deck and end up with, like, Appa in play and four airbended Angs and then Aven Interrupter and pass with infinite 1/1s. So your opponent has to have six spells to break up your board of infinite 1/1s to be able to win, which is basically impossible.
Big State of Judgments, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this deck, I mean, it looks pretty good and exciting. It actually, as we'll get into in a moment, it did quite poorly. Do you think this is a consequence of what you mentioned, it having a pretty poor mana base without Temple Garden and Hollowed Fountain, or is it something more?
Well, certainly the like ton of red removal, I think, is not what this deck wants to play against. But also, yeah, I mean, I'm not really a believer that you can just magically have good three color mana when no other deck in the format has demonstrated that's true, especially for a deck trying to curve out fast. I mean, Jeskai Control is the only deck that's like barely able to do that,
right? And especially when you're a land or elves deck, right? I mean, this card, first of all, it requires that you play it on turn one off of green mana, but then it doesn't actually help you very much for casting your other spells. I mean, if it has white blue pips, all these looking around, it casts a pretty
narrow
set of things.
Yeah, Temple Garden will definitely help.
Yeah, Temple Garden would help because you can... Starting Town's kind of the land, I guess, you want to lead with in this, because you can play Land of Elves in turn one and then also have an extra color of mana, and Temple Garden will help. But a lot of the time when, say in Modern, when these Bant creature decks have been popular, the one mana card of choice is usually like Birds of Paradise or Noble Hierarch cards that add different colors of mana. And both Badgermole and Land of Elves kind of have this problem where they're adding lots of green mana. This deck, I think, plays the Gene Pollinator as a way to sort of combat this, because this is a mana creature that can't actually add any color. But obviously that card has its problems.
Yeah. No, I mean, Gene Pollinator has been seeing a lot of play after four Lanner Elves in all of these Cub decks. I guess the exception being Otters, which doesn't even play Lanner Elves, or maybe just a couple. But yeah, the mana issues were on camera even for Javier. In the last round against Michael Plummer in game one, he played a turn one elf and a turn two Badgermole Cub, and then in his upkeep with all of his, you know, lands untapped, his opponent cast a fire magic for one, and he didn't have white and blue mana because he had a green multiversal passage and a Starting Town.
Oof, rough.
So he couldn't even aim. Yeah, I think his opponent knew that, which is why he was happy to do it on upkeep, just to tap the Earthbended land.
You know, right.
I think if he did have white blue mana, his opponent might have just cast fire magic on his main phase, but still.
Yeah. So before we get too much into the other decks, we might as well look at this graph that Frank Carson usually puts together for Pro Tours and whatnot. This shows the win percentage of the decks at the events.
Yep.
Some of them have a pretty small sample size. So this black bar represents margin of error. Basically, the wider the bar is, the larger margin of error, and that just means that there's a smaller sample size. So as you can see, Golgari Dragons had a 75% win rate. But that's because only Ben Stark,
who I drafted on my final or on my fantasy worlds team in a Discord I was in. Second pick, though, it was 14 people, so this was actually pretty far along in the draft. But people thought that was too high. But Ben's results in this tournament are almost exactly what I expect from Ben nowadays, which is kind of funny, known as a limited specialist. But for like the last 2 years, he's been showing up to Pro Tours with a deck almost completely of his own design, from what I can tell, and having a pretty high win rate with them. And doing kind of medium and limited. So him going 3-3 in draft and 6-2 with a complete brew is like exactly what I expected of Ben at Worlds, to be honest.
What other event did he do that in? That's funny.
So he played like mono red at OTJ. He played white black pixie at, I think he was an 8-0 player at PT Aether Drift with white black pixie, when people, you know, were playing Esper pixie at the time, stuff like that.
Yeah, his reputation certainly would suggest otherwise, right? I mean, although he has you know, he's done quite well in Constructor over the years too.
I think Ben is a bad drafter, but it is funny because there was a time he was called the best drafter in the world or whatever by LSV. That was mostly a limited resources thing, to be fair, but you know, he's certainly good at it, and he had a good understanding of it that maybe other people nowadays have caught up to on, especially because he's made so much content in his life. But yeah, you know, there is something to be said that, you know, I don't think many players can get away with this, but, you know, he's playing a deck that no one in the tournament practiced against, that's for sure. So he's going to know things that maybe other players didn't. about
Yeah. Do you want me to pull up his deck? I have it ready. We could talk about it.
I don't actually know too much about it besides just, you know, kind of the Dragons package that has been around since Dragonstorm, and I know it had shared roots.
Yeah, we might as well
I'm
look
not
at it really quick.
Particularly excited by it, but
sure.
I think he lost to two of the TCG players on Is It Lessons.
Okay. But still had a good record otherwise. I mean, it's possible he just played against other things.
If you hover, you can see what he lost to. Oh, no, he lost to Chris Botello on Jeskai Control and then Gabriel Nassif on Is It Lessons. But he did beat two Is It Lessons decks that were not from that team.
Gotcha. All right, well, here it is. This is the deck if anyone wanted to see it. It is pretty unique. Basically just a green-black rock deck, which who knew that was still good, huh? He's using the
Ice
Rampant
Growth
to get into Ice Till Explorer, yep. He's got Fabled
Once
Passage.
Yep. Esper Origins.
Esper Origins is a strong card. Yeah.
You know, Urgent Necropsy is a pretty unique card that is also kind of good against Artist Talent and Monument to Endurance, potentially.
Mm-hmm. It's funny that they call this deck Dragons. I mean, I guess it's got a good amount of dragons, and it's
not
got
the caustic
exhales,
and yeah.
Gloomvine Regent doesn't seem like a particularly good card. Certainly okay. A lot of the other of these rare cycle dragons are better. The Scavenger Regent's card that I've played with before, I know this one's pretty nice, especially when people are playing lots of little creatures like they are in this format.
Yeah. The ward may be awkward against Monument to Endurance.
That's funny.
Yeah, you know, they have ways to kill
nice
that dragon pretty easily with their removal, and if they have a monument in play, they don't even care about the ward. Just a nice little rummage for them.
Oh. Well, don't let the ward fool you then. It's actually a downside. Discard a card.
So, I mean, the Otters deck picking up, I guess, because we didn't talk about it, you know, it was a deck that I talked about, you know, 6 months ago or whatever after rotation because it didn't really lose anything. And then we saw the Cauldron deck kind of rise in popularity and then obviously really strong deck, really fast. Made sense for everyone to play that deck. But that got banned. And then on top of that, banning Screaming Nemesis, which I think was basically the strongest card in the mono red decks against the Otters decks because they were also relying on red removal. And then combined with the printing of Badgermal Cub and Boomerang Basics, they're taking advantage of both of those. You know, this was already a deck with plenty of things to bounce. It used to be a This Town Ain't Big Enough deck before the bans. So, kind of slots in perfectly. But yeah, I think unfortunately, the cycle of enduring creatures in general are not going to line up well against Combustion Technique. And I would call, you know, the Is It Otters deck, I guess, it has these mana engines with Badgermal Cub and Enduring Vitality. It has a bunch of card advantage with Stock Up and Storm Chaser's Talent and sometimes some other things. Thunder Trap Trainer as well. This is a deck that offsprings Thunder Trap Trainer more than any other deck, I would say. And then it plays some, you know, removal, and then it has this combo of usually Enduring Vitality, starting your turn with it in play, playing a big I'm spacing on the name of the spell, the Rat X spell.
Song
of Totentaz to make a bunch of rats, and then playing Valley Floodcaller, which can untap all your rats whenever you cast non-creature spells. You could do an infinite loop of just playing Storm Chaser's Talent and Boomerang Basicsing it and returning the Boomerang Basics with level 2. Or, you know, you can just cast like 3 non-creature spells and your opponent's probably dead.
Yeah. So kind of a combo deck in some sense, but it's really also a tempo deck that sort of just utilizes this combo finish, so to speak.
Yeah, it's a thing that I think we haven't seen too much, I guess. I mean, I guess Up the Beanstalk is kind of this way, but mana acceleration and card draw are best friends. So that's what I'd say this deck is really kind of doing, is playing a lot of mana acceleration and a lot of card advantage pieces to then just kind of, you know, win the game out in whatever way seems best in standard, which happens to be this.
Mm-hmm. Overall, this deck didn't do terribly well. Arnie obviously made top 8. Do you think this deck, I mean, in the face of Is It Lessons, it's probably a bad matchup for it.
It is, yeah.
So I don't know that this would be a deck I'd be looking at.
And you know, forward. I'm in a Discord with CFT Sock Rejang, who got 23rd at this tournament, who also played Otters. And they said, you know, they didn't really appreciate the artist talent endurance thing because they did actually identify that deck in testing. You know, it's kind of interesting hearing from some of the teams. Some of them did have a license deck and some of them didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And they thought Monument to Endurance was just like too bad of a Magic card, but eventually they just kind of realized it's kind of the same as Valley Floodcaller, you know, like it's just
I was gonna say this one's really so much better, huh?
yeah
it makes sense. And once you see the Monument in play too, one of the things that this might change, but one of the things that was going on is there's really not a ton of ways to remove artifacts that people play commonly. There are a decent amount of cyber cards and whatnot that destroy enchantments. Get Lost is a good example of it, like a main card that happens to hit enchantments, but almost nothing hits artifacts. So, yeah, the enduring monument just sort of sits in play and eventually drains your opponent. There's nothing they can do about it.
Yeah, I will say the monument is not a very impressive looking card, except when you start playing the Jeskai or Blue-White Control matchup, where for that reason, it's a permanent that often sticks in play that's hard for them to answer. And that's where things like Agna Kella or, you know, Abandoned Attachments, or they don't play blockers, so you actually get an attacks with Grand Grand, things like that. It really starts to matter. In almost every other matchup I've played, the Monument is a really kind of embarrassingly expensive thing to try to develop if you don't already have a talent going.
Yeah, that's fair. Although I think for a deck that essentially is trying to play such a long game, it's important to have some kind of resilient way to win.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's certainly like the best way to win. And, you know, when I first saw this deck before playing games with it, I thought, man, like, do you really need to play four Monument to Endurance? What if you just played like two and two stock up and kind of brought things together? But after playing it more, I think playing four just makes sense, you know.
What about this Is It Looting deck?
Yeah, so this is a deck that even today is really popular in Magic Online, and it's kind of confusing to me. I actually played it some today on Arena, and that didn't help me appreciate the deck anymore. I really think it's not very good. I think people's builds of it are better than some of the ones I've seen. JD, former world champion, great player. But, you know, for a deck with like a lot of card draw and rummaging, I would say this deck is surprisingly clunky. It has a lot of things to do on two, and just like, also, I think Duelist of the Mind and also Tiger Seal are really not very good cards.
Because I agree with that.
You're just doing a lot of, you have to do something to make them work. And when they work, it's not exceptionally strong. It's like your opponent takes three damage.
Yeah, like you assemble Tron is that you got a cheap 3/3.
And also, I mean, big side note here, but I brought it up recently. Like, the vigilance on Duelist of the Mind is one of the worst lines of vigilance I've ever seen, because it's almost always just like a 0/3 on your opponent's turn. And on top of that, like, you know, this is Nathan Stoyer's world card. And I just feel, you know, people have had bad cards, but I feel like he was kind of scammed, because like, this card has the line of text vigilance, which could have been something better. You know, like,
yeah, I've always kind of hated this card.
Hard to identify it in hindsight.
Kind of rigged.
Yeah, like, man, you could have had something at least a little better there.
I never really liked Paulo's card either.
Yeah.
But even Paulo's card is better than the Duels to the Mind.
JED's card's coming out in Lorwyn. That card probably has a decent chance of making my top 10 list, I could say, already early on.
Wow, okay. Have we seen it?
Yeah, it got spoiled. It's the 2/4 that, when it enters, you discard a card and search your library for a creature card and put it into your hand.
I haven't seen it.
Yeah, it's a 3-mana green 2/4 ETB, discard any card, then search your library for a creature card, reveal it, and put it into your hand. It's just like exactly what the Superior Spider-Man deck wants as a card. So
right. Okay.
Probably going to make its way into that deck immediately.
Yeah.
So we can talk about that deck next, I guess, too.
Totally. Yeah. Why don't you all... I need to pull that one up still, but why don't you tell me about it?
Yeah, so Ken Yukihiro made top 8 with the Sultai Reanimator deck, which is using Superior Spider-Man mostly to try to copy Bringer of the Last Gift, which does a living death slash living end effect of return of getting rid of all the other creatures in play and then reanimating everyone's graveyard. So this deck's a bunch of self-mill. You know, the self-mill package in general and standard, there's a lot of, I mean, it's interesting to see there's a lot of different options to mill yourself in standard. They almost always have Overlord of the Balemirk, which is an amazing card. And then, yeah, just kind of assemble this graveyard combo. This version for redundancy has analyzed the pollen to help you search for Superior Spider-Man, because it is sort of a deck, kind of like the Abuelo's Omniscience deck of before, that really needs to actually assemble its thing. And even though you might mill and see half your deck, you know, that's not always a guarantee that the top half of your deck has a four of.
Right.
Or in this case, two different four ofs. And yeah, a lot of the Japanese players in the tournament teamed together and played this deck. And a lot of people going into the tournament that played Otters or even Blue Red Lessons actually said this was their worst matchup. But we saw Seth Manfield beat Ken 3-0 in the top eight. And, you know, I guess this is an example of a three-color deck where maybe the mana is a little bit more acceptable. I think, you know, we mentioned this a long time ago on rotation, that Sultai just has pretty good verges and two shock lands, you know, just stuff like that. It has two fast lands, even though this deck doesn't even play Botanical Sanctum. But, you know, just a lot of stuff to work together.
Yeah, and it's certainly more acceptable to play like a slower three-color deck too.
Yeah, exactly.
You have less pressure.
To play Llanowar Elves into Aang's Fifth Savior is a different story for sure.
Yeah, like Jeskai Control has done well before. That's another example.
Yeah, and Teemer Otters is a three-color deck too. That deck also uses Analyze the Pollen to help fix your mana. You know, that's a slow card that helps fix your mana.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you think of this deck going forward? Do you think if people start, because I think what's going to happen with the Lessons deck is one of the ways people are going to try to fight it is with Graveyard Hate.
Yeah.
So I think there's going to be more Graveyard Hate going around.
Yeah, I think there definitely will be. So that might be an issue for this deck. I do think, you know, that 3-mana 2/4 in Lorwyn is going to, like, that card seems better than every spell in this deck except for like the combo things and Overlord of the Balemirk, maybe, you know, like it doesn't get more perfect
nicely.
And like a creature that lets you discard something and tutor the exact thing you need.
Right. This Awaken the Underdead fits pretty nicely in this deck, I think.
Yeah, and pretty good against, you know, Artist Talent and Monument to Endurance to have answers to it. Mm-hmm. This deck, I'm sure people are going to keep playing it. So I do agree with you that Graveyard Hate is going to be on a rise with the Lessons deck. I wanted to bring up, having played a lot of Lessons Mirrors, I don't think Graveyard Hate is very good in that matchup.
Okay, why not? Is it specifically the Graveyard Hate Blue-Red has access to?
Well, it's not that I think Soulguide Lantern has to be a bad card against the Blue-Red Lessons deck. I just think the mirrors, you know, they almost remind me of the Teemer Wreck mirrors from forever ago. Like, I just think the name of the game in the mirror is to stick an Artist Talent and especially see if you can level it. Which, you know, if you get your graveyard hated, then like your accumulated wisdom won't be draw three, but like your opponent had to spend a card to play this to turn your draw three into an anticipate. And then if you have a talent going, it's not very hard to get another draw three again later. But also, I just think the matchup is actually more about assembling your engine of Artist Talent and then eventually Monument than it really has anything to do about like raw card quality or card count.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense to me. Seth had two Soul Guide Lanterns in his sideboard. Did you notice if he was bringing it in any of the mirrors he played?
Yeah, he was.
Okay.
But, and you know, it depends on what you have access to in your sideboard. Maybe it's better than other things.
Sure.
But yeah, I think.
But when you're building your deck, perhaps.
Yeah, I mean, I've been including Soul Guide Lantern for the Sultai Reanimator deck, but I just haven't been boarding them in the mirrors. And my opponents have been casting them against me a lot, and I've not been very impressed. That being said, it's, you know, I don't want to say don't bring in your Soul Guide Lanterns against Is It Lessons, because it changes depending on what deck you are, in my opinion.
Gotcha. But it's not the highest priority card. It's not like a hammer or anything.
But, you know, like the blue-white control decks of Seam Rips and Get Losts that can answer Artist Talent fairly easily, their graveyard hate is really good against lessons.
Makes sense.
I've heard stories of mono red now, you know, being good against lessons, and they include some higher toughness creatures like Nova Hellkite. So they're protecting their creatures from combustion technique in addition to, you know, the other reasons to stop is it lessons graveyard.
Mm-hmm. So
it certainly depends on what your plan is in the lessons matchup, but I just think in the mirror, it's actually, I don't think it's obvious if you should have graveyard hate, and currently I'm leaning very much so that you shouldn't have it.
Okay. Going back to Worlds, Badgermole Club, of course, was a huge talk of the town before the tournament. Obviously, the Is It Lessons deck is able to control it pretty well, but this is another deck that was kind of a forerunner to perform well, and I mean, a lot of players played it. It did poorly at the tournament overall, but this is Simic Ouroboroid. Do you have any quick thoughts on this deck?
Yeah, this is like the level zero kind of deck that I think people were expecting a lot of, and then some of them evolved their deck into different versions, and we actually saw Team Handshake, many of them played a black-green version of this deck.
Mm-hmm. I mean, certainly does some really powerful things with just fast Badgermole Clubs and Jackal. The black version won't have that, of course, but still have the fast starts, and then getting, you know, turn three Ouroboroid can win a lot.
Yeah, it's fast out of the gates, but it's not very interactive, which I think just, I'm kind of glad World shaped up this way, I guess, because if this is the best thing you can be doing in Standard, then the mirrors would be really play draw, and I just feel like there's not a lot to like break serve, you know, like,
right.
So I'm kind of glad that, you know, playing shock on Badgermole Cub kind of is what proved
it
to
works.
Be effective. It works, yeah.
Another deck that did quite well at the tournament. Interestingly, almost all the players that played control played Jeskai control rather than like blue-white control. And overall, a good amount of players played it, and it had a 59% win rate. This is an example. This is Chris Botello's Jeskai control.
Yeah,
list.
Chris is quite the brewer. So this is a little bit, you know, there's a cursed recording in here. Some interesting things, three steps ahead. If you want to pull up, if you can, pull up Adam Brace. That's a teammate of mine.
Okay.
Who?
Give me a sec.
This is, you know, his first full year on the Pro Tour, so making Worlds and going 7-7 is pretty awesome. He's played, you know, like one Pro Tour before this year. But
and
He played Jeskai control, and some other people on his team, I think, played the same, at least close to 75 as him. And this is, you know, I think I've talked about it before. I guess I would call it, I guess the word I've used before is ape. I'm trying to think of a better word. It's a very kind of tap out control deck. It's really trying to play the mana efficiency. It, you know, he said it himself to me, you know, you're trying to interact on turn two, play stock up or the Jeskai enchantment, rediscover the way on turn three, interact again on turn four, and then play Shiko and get back your rediscover, your stock up. And, you know, you can see he's got the full eight, you know, effective stock ups. He's got, you see 15 in that instant category of cards that cost two or less. In addition to that, two seam rips. So you have 17 ways to interact on the first two turns, which I think is like an all-time high for Jeskai control lists. I've seen decks play less than 14, and when I've played this deck, I've told myself, like, you got to have like at least 14, or, you know, I know it's a little arbitrary, but to see 17 I think is awesome.
Yeah, I like this list. I like the last Appa. He's my favorite.
Yeah, Appa, you know, you can rebuy a Shiko for two. It's a flash 3/4. Also, you can, if you go turn three, rediscover the way, turn four, you get chapter two, and then on your opponent's turn, you can flash an Appa and hit the rediscover the way.
Yeah. Sometimes it does things with these enchantment rule spells, too, if they target a token, for instance. I wanted to mention that one of the things you said right away about the Is It Lessons deck is one of the ways you want to be able to combat it is you want to be able to hit Grand Grand efficiently, not die to Storm Chaser talent, and also be able to answer the red talent.
Yep, Artist Talent, yep.
Artist Talent, yeah. So Seam Rip seems like it could be an all-time high there. Maybe we could fit some more into this deck.
I do think actually moving forward, maybe blue-white is the direction you want to go for a control deck.
Yeah, the one of the things I thought about with all these Jeskai decks is, I mean, this what deck's a little different. Some of them were playing even less Shiko, and I was kind of wondering why they even had red. You know, a lot of them were just playing like Lightning Helix and Fire Magic, and it's just like, I mean, those cards are fine, but you lose a lot by doing this Jeskai mana base instead of just blue white.
Yeah, and like, so blue white gets Fountain Port and Demolition Field. It'll have probably better mana for Seam Rip, I imagine, especially with Hollowed Fountain. And I think Elspeth, Storm Slayer, and Fountain Port are going to be pretty good ways to close out the game against Izzet Lessons. You know, there's actually a lot of removal that hits Shiko out of the Lessons deck, and having played that matchup, you know, you have to leave in some removal anyways, even post-boards, but I think it's just really hard for the Jeskai deck to pressure the Lessons deck, and they might eventually assemble their engines if you don't pressure them, because they can just kind of like Combustion Technique or even kick Fire Magic on Shiko. Or sorry, not Fire Magic, Firebending Lesson. Yeah, also Rest in Peace, I think, could be main deckable, depending on how the meta shapes up, and not using your own graveyard is kind of an important part of the equation to playing with Rest in Peace. But yeah, I think, so you have a lot of creatures here, which I think is also going to be a nice part of the blue-white deck, but in post-board games. I guess I'm thinking, you know, from the perspective of an open deck list, but not even necessarily that, but just, you know, the blue-red Lessons deck has a lot of removal main, so I don't really want to have really any creatures main, I think, if I'm playing a control deck right now.
Yeah, so the list Jacob's talking about I have on screen right now is the blue-white control deck I was playing before Worlds.
Yeah.
And I was trying some new cards. I had Aang, which I found to be quite good in small numbers, and Wan Chi Tong, I also liked in small numbers. But neither of those cards are anything particularly special. I guess I've also got Beza. And I totally see the argument of moving those into the sideboard, essentially, or cutting them, and relying on Elspeth almost completely, maybe even going back to a copy of, you could try Ugin again, seven
yeah,
mana.
Yeah, Ugin definitely, I think, could be reasonable.
Just to rely, you know, just to blank all those, because one of the reasons that Lessons deck does so well is because it has all those efficient removal spells, but they have, you know, like 11 removal spells, so if you were to blank all of those, that would certainly be quite good.
So recently I played against Blue-White Control, and played a long game one that I lost, and it was funny because I thought they might actually deck, but then they played Spirit Water Revival, though.
Oh, nice.
I think I would have lost to Elspeth if they had that card instead, to be fair, before they decked.
Okay, yeah.
Just because Elspeth is a pretty quick clock. So even if, like, 10 cards in their deck, I don't think they would have had to worry about decking if I had, like, Boomerang Basics and stuff. But yeah, I got super stranded on removal. They answered all my Artist Talents. They didn't answer all my Monuments, but they didn't need to, because they had at least two Demolition Fields I saw, which answered my one Agnikella, which is, like, the only... If they can answer all your Artist Talent and Agnikella, then, you know, sure, you can resolve some abandoned attachments sometimes. I guess they have to answer Grand Grand, too. And they did Day of Judgment, like, a single Grand Grand on multiple occasions, I think. But then post-board, you know, maybe just... You know, people are still figuring it out, but I think, you know, the Storm Chaser's Talents and Grand Grand's kind of getting to the board early, and me not having those removal spells really made it hard for them. But I was thinking, you know, especially three toughness things, you know, Aang, Voice of Victory, maybe the Unagi, 5/5 Flash. Those could be really problematic things for the Lessons deck to still keep in removal to handle.
Right.
While also boarding in a bunch of counter magic. I'll make
and
a
then
note
also,
about Wan
Chi if you Tong. Have Rest in Peace in play, the...
Yeah, then Combustion Technique won't work. Yep. So, as much as I kind of wish Wan Chi Tong was correct to play in these decks, man, like, it just dies to any of their instants with the trigger on the stack every time. And even though you're up a lot of cards in that exchange, you know, if you want to be up a lot of cards, you can play something better, I guess, is what I would say.
Yeah.
And, like,
I don't think
and have it get shocked was kind of just, like, to some extent a win for me as the Lessons player.
Yeah, I don't think Wan Chi Tong is particularly good against Izzet. And I think if you look at all of the control decks at Worlds, none of them played Wan Chi Tong, and I think that I did like the card, and I found it to be quite good against green decks. When I was playing against a lot of the Badgermole Cub decks, I found it to be quite good. And, you know, it's good in mirrors, all that sort of thing. But, yeah, you might want to change it around. And, honestly, if you didn't have Wan Chi Tong and you didn't have Beza, you might not want Aang either, because the creature sort of package is actually kind of nice in some matchups. Aang might still be a good sideboard card.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, Aang sounds like one of the best, like, kind of sideboard starts to a creature flash strategy. Certainly, like, I'd want to play creatures that don't die to firebending less than unkicked, because I think they're just going to be forced to maybe leave those in or thing. I mean, it just depends. If it's open deck list, they'll know which ones to leave in, but...
Sure. One of the common things that the blue-white decks have started to do, which is pretty smart, is play Voice of Victory and Enduring Curiosity in their sideboard. You don't even necessarily need Enduring Curiosity. I mean, Voice of Victory is a pretty strong card.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I had a thought about Voice of Victory, too, which maybe this would come up against the green-blue deck. I played, like, a game day a while ago, and I probably talked about it with Jeskai Control pre-rotation, I think. Pre-rotation, because I lost the finals to the Jeskai Convoke deck. And I don't think I registered Voice of Victory in my sideboard. So I don't think I had the option to think about it, but I realized recently that in the context of a person, like a deck that might be popular, that's a go wide beatdown deck that your sweepers are going to be really important against, but their kind of counterplay to sweepers is to play counter magic. You actually, I think, just want to have like the Voice of Victory plus Day of Judgment combo against them, because also Voice of Victory is kind of a decent blocker in the early turns.
Yeah.
And I think those matchups end up playing out. Like, I just don't think that's an uncommon situation to be in, that, like, people play the green-blue Ouroboros deck is, I think, an example of just, like, flood the board and have a counterspell. So, like, you sticking a Voice of Victory early, they just, like, can't interact with at all, and you'll just know you can resolve Day of Judgment.
Yeah. I've actually boarded in a couple of Voice of Victories against exactly that green-blue deck before. It was a little bit of, like, I had a lot of cards to cut sort of thing, and I was like, you know what? I'll just bring these in because... I don't know, I could block with it, and then...
I guess it's just like a little counterintuitive initially to be like, I'm going to board in a creature to resolve my Day of Judgment, but I actually think the way games of Magic play out is that there are just these kind of full-on board presence decks that splash blue for counter magic, and that's kind of the perfect time for Voice of Victory to...
And specifically, you know, even if your Day of Judgment, you had to discard a card or sacrifice a permanent, the fact that it's so good against them is worth it. Which is not usually the case against even a lot of decks where Day of Judgment's good, but yeah, totally. one more Jeskai Control deck I was going to bring up.
Gwen Stacy?
Yeah, because I don't know why I didn't think of that, but I didn't think of that.
Yeah, so I mean, that deck, I know I didn't talk to Jennifer, but I talked to someone that teamed with Jennifer, and I was told this deck is, you know, it's playing more like, I guess if you've seen like the Jeskai Lightning Helix modern decks back in the day, where like it's trying to apply some pressure while interacting a little bit. But I'm not a believer, I guess. I mean, Gwen Stacy just like doesn't draw a card if it gets removed. People that weren't Lessons deck were playing Torch the Tower, so it doesn't even like work. And you have no, you know, rummaging here or just looting to get this into your graveyard without casting it.
Gotcha. So you have to cast it. It's got to die.
Yeah, the dream of like, I'm going to Shiko back my Gwen Stacy involves casting Gwen Stacy, which is like a deal breaker to me.
That makes sense. Yeah. So the idea is here is Shiko can actually get Ghost Spider.
Yes.
And cast Ghost Spider out of the graveyard. But yeah, I mean, that makes sense. Maybe you could play some cards where you could loot a little bit.
Yeah. Airbending can do that too, by the way. I think you can go Gwen Stacy into Aang and then cast Ghost Spider for two.
Okay. Yeah, I bet you can, because you could do it with adventure cards.
You could do that with Appa too. Yeah. I don't know if anybody did that, but like, I think, so there's certainly like bigger cheats on mana you can do, but as far as card quality goes, like Appa and Roaring Furnace are actually kind of cool friends.
Yeah.
Because if you Roaring Furnace something early, then later you can Appa the Roaring Furnace and play Steaming Sauna for two mana. Which is pretty cool.
I was playing a little bit with decks. There's all kinds of things you do with Appa. I don't I don't know how much of it is good. I was the, what's the artifact? The one in a blue artifact where it comes to play, you draw a card, and when it leaves,
yeah,
you draw
Cryogen
a card.
Relic.
Cryogen Relic. Yeah, that one's pretty sweet with Appa, too.
Yeah, you also that card shell is something I think maybe is not looked at enough with Boomerang Basics. Not even to put like a bunch in your deck, but you know, I'm just surprised I don't see like one Cryogen Relic every now and then.
Yeah. I mean, maybe if that deck evolves in the way that you might imagine with less Storm Chaser talent, you could look to playing a couple copies of those.
Yeah, like I said, they gave that blue-red looting deck a shot. I ended up putting a Cryogen Relic in there after playing some games because I wanted more ways to like grow the Duelist or untap the Tiger Seal.
Right. I also thought it was interesting she had four Legend of Kuroks in this deck. What do you think about the Legend of Kurok in a deck like this?
It seems weirder to me because this deck already seems a little clunky to me.
Yeah, I agree.
I definitely could see building around the Legend of Kurok. I think it's going to be a little harder now because another card that I think is going to be really on the rise is Anul. Yeah. To counter Artist Talent and Monument. So I'd be pretty worried about that. Which I guess on that topic of like the lessons mirrors playing out about Artist Talent, I found, you know, playing your Anuls and then, you know, it's like, the matchup's not very fast, so leaving up a null the whole game is like hypothetically possible. But even if you like find spots where you can't afford to do that, you can still like Boomerang Basics the talent later and encounter it on the way down.
Yeah, totally. Do you think so? You said you had Ral as like your sideboard card for this matchup. I know the Quantum Riddler too. Did you also have that?
No.
Okay.
I don't think Quantum Riddler has impressed me in mirrors either. Ral has. Ral also does something which I like a lot, which is work with Monument to Endurance. You know, I had a game recently where like I stuck a Monument in the mirror. My opponent didn't answer it. I don't know if they like countered Artist Talent or if I just never drew it. But that Monument that I stuck did 3 damage to them. And then I stuck a Ral and was just kind of like, I minus the Ral, picked like draw a card, make a treasure, or maybe one of those times I picked lose 3 life. And then later in the game, I just played 2 Monuments, minus my Ral, made my opponent lose 6 life, or sorry, lose 9 life because I had 3 Monuments, made 3 treasures, and then passed the turn and cast Abandoned Attachments in their upkeep for the other 9 life. But, you know, Ral is kind of a Artist Talent substitute to some extent, and it's might be dodging some of the interaction people try to play for it.
Right. Yeah, I'm still really appealed by the fact that they have to attack it because their red removal can't target it and they're not very good at attacking it. So it seems like a good mirror card for sure.
And this is a little weird to say for a mirror match because if my opponent did the same thing, maybe my plan wouldn't be good. But I've actually been considering, especially because I've been on the draw a lot as kind of a flex because I've just been 2-0-ing a lot of people in these mirrors. But I'm getting to the point where like my opponents pretty regularly, at least on the play, have these Storm Chaser talents in their deck and maybe all their Grand Grands that I've been considering, you know, Pyroclasm in the mirror.
Wow. Because you don't have yours.
Yeah, because I don't have mine. And I've actually been choosing to leave in Iroh's Demonstrations over any copies of Combustion Technique just for the deal one to multiple otters. But I'm questioning if it being a lesson is actually worth it compared to just like playing Pyroclasm, which kills Grand Grand just as good as Iroh's Demonstration.
Right. Yeah, maybe. Especially if the lesson thing isn't quite as relevant in the mirror.
Yeah,
the matches are slower.
I mean, it certainly matters, but also like it is weird because once somebody does play a Soul Guide Lantern against you, then it almost doesn't matter, you know. So there's these weird little things.
Yeah, but also, I imagine the games go long, right? And so you'll get it. You'll get up to 3 lessons.
But yeah, I'm starting to approach these mirrors at least on the draw of like if I have the right sideboard plan, I just need to not run over, and I feel like I'm coming out ahead.
Yeah.
On that topic, I guess, too, just because I'm sure, you know, I've been playing a lot, so I want to share. Steel Quenchia is not a card I'm that excited to play, but, like, it is unique, so I am playing one. It's also, like, I think the Unagi might be a pretty good card against this deck, but honestly, like, it's kind of really expensive and not always that good, and playing, like, one Quench to have for that card is probably, like, always going to work. Another card that when I first started playing, I thought maybe wouldn't be that good is Spell Pierce, but I've had a lot of people Spell Pierce me, and I think it's better than I thought. And also, I was looking to solve a specific problem, which is a null on my Artist Talent, and I don't think there's a better solution to that problem than your own Spell Pierce. because it's pretty hard for them to like leave up a null plus two mana. It's pretty easy for them to do that on exactly turn three, and kind of impossible to realistically do on every other turn of the game.
Yeah. So is Spell Pierce is a card you board in for the mirror then?
Yeah, among other things. But yeah, I could see even having like two in the board, even though it's kind of weird because it's not a lesson and you could have the quench, but it also, you know, covers you. You know, even on the draw against Storm Chaser's talent, if you pass a Spell Pierce and they cast Boomerang Basics on the talent, you could just Spell Pierce the Boomerang Basics. Not bad.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, the deck is just almost all non-creature spells, right? So.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think just you end up having such powerful turns that, like, this, and you have Rummaging. Like, the Spell Pierce has not felt bad. And in fact, it just sometimes is, you know, it's hard for it to be bad when, yeah, the deck is almost all non-creature spells and you're just going to force plays on each other.
Oh, lastly, we've had, you know, all these bans, and it seems like, is it just rules the day? I don't know what it is exactly. Something to do with how the format is structured around cheap cards mattering a lot and them having the proper cheap cards.
This is like the third time in a row that they ban an Izzet deck, and then another Izzet deck takes over and has no overlap.
I know. From the last one. It's crazy. And even this deck, well, I'm not even talking about... I wasn't even going to bring up bans, but yeah, people talk about bans. I don't even know what you ban for this deck. It would still be good, unless you want to kill the lesson package. But mostly I was going to say, do you see ways to attack this deck? Do you think certain cards, are there certain cards you might want to try to fit in decks or build decks around to attack this deck? Like, certainly Graveyard Hate is an obvious one.
Yeah, I mean, what I was talking about, Rep is an obvious one. Interesting. I guess... Also, to kind of jump the gun on what's going to be legal and standard, I had to verify this myself today, but because I saw like a leak or rumor that Spell Snare was going to be legal and standard with the next set, so I decided
it's
going to
be like a supplemental product, right?
Yeah, but so I'm on their page. It says introducing themed X and draft night, and it says starting with Lorwyn Eclipse, we're adding two new products. These are 60 card themed X, ready to play standard decks. They're going to be legal and standard. And in the image for it, on the pirate deck, it shows the deck list like on the side of the box. And in clear as day, it says two Spell Snare. So at this point, I'm confident, you know, it might not be in Lorwyn Eclipse, but it's certainly in this supplementary product that is announced to be standard legal. So I'm certainly full on expecting Spell Snare to be standard legal with Lorwyn, basically, which, you know, this deck has a lot of two drops that are really important to counter. It's going to probably change how this deck and, you know, other decks build their decks and play.
Spell Snare might just be good in this deck.
Yeah, definitely. you know, I was talking about that idea of, like, should we main deck the talents even if the mirrors are going to be popular? And I think part of the issue with not main decking them is in game one, you're not really equipped to fight over artist talent. But if you had Spell Snare, you would be.
Yeah, that's true.
And also, you know... Spell Snare is a card you really want to be able to leave up turn one on the draw. So it kind of gets in the way of Storm Chaser's talent. Also, really wanting to leave it up turn one on the draw is going to probably really matter what verges are good. Though I guess this deck has the wrong verge and is totally capable of leaving up Spell Snare turn one on the draw and will be even more capable of Steam Vents.
Yeah, Steam Vents, Spire Bluff Canal. So decks that can play the fast lands, like, you know, a control deck will play
Spell Snare.
Yeah, I guess the
fast lands are a big deal.
Yeah, like a control deck will play Spell Snare probably, but they're not going to be playing the fast lands, so they're going to be relying on, I mean...
Yeah,
I
guess the blue-white deck is a great example, because it has no Seacrim Coast, and it has the blue-white verge, so it's actually kind of a tough deck to play Spell Snare.
That starts out of one white, and they might still play it, but it'll be worse in that deck than it would if there was, say, a blue-black control deck, because the Gloomlink verge is on blue. So, okay, cool. I played against some, like, Golgari Roots decks on the ladder because you know, Scavenging Ooze and Roots and whatnot. I think the idea was to play against lessons. I was actually playing my green lessons deck, so I had enchantment removal and stuff, and my deck was a little bit different, so it wasn't too much of a problem. But
that's cool. You know, I've seen some graveyardy decks that sometimes don't include Roots, and I think, like, you could just put one copy of Roots in there and it might be good, you know. Like, you don't have to be a full-on combo deck. Get some value out of that card.
It is a pretty good guard for sure. I know those decks sort of went away after Tyvar rotated, but
yeah, comboing with Roots is a lot harder. I've seen lists play the red Enduring Creature to pick up and play to then do a full combo with, but that's really clunky, obviously.
Yeah. Other than that, you know, this deck, I think, is here to stay, especially the Lessons package. It is pretty hard to interact with this stuff. I mean, even when you load up on Seam Rips and whatever, they're going to draw a lot of cards, so you have to fight that angle of their deck, too. You know, it doesn't matter how many Seam Rips are in your deck. If they're drawing three times as many cards as you, they're going to out Artist Talent your Seam Rips. That sort of thing.
Oh, I remembered another kind of cute card. I guess one with a Null so popular, it might not work, but a card that might be good against this deck, if you can sequence to resolve it, maybe Voice of Victory would help, is River Turn Monument.
Oh, okay.
Which you can exhaust to mill a player equal to the number of cards in their graveyard. So you want to not play it with Graveyard Hate. But
right.
This deck very easily can lose to mill equal to the number of cards in their graveyard.
Like maybe another control deck with that as the win condition or something?
Yeah, or maybe just a sideboard kind of thing. But yeah, I guess thing. Game one, this. But to be honest, I think if you're playing a creatureless control deck, I think your game one against this deck might be pretty good.
It might be. But the mill plan would probably work better in game one than it would in sideboard games. It might not even work in sideboard games, because once they have all, you know, so many cards and interact with your cards, it might be more about attrition than mill.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Okay, well, if there's anything else you wanted to cover, Jacob, speak your piece or I'll do the spiel.
No, I think we're good.
All right, well, thanks for listening, everyone, or thanks for watching if you're here on YouTube. Remember, otherwise, you can find us in podcast form on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, wherever you listen to podcasts. You can support us over on Patreon for $1 a month, and that's really helpful. We're really grateful for all of our patrons over there. So that's it for this one, folks. Until next time. So, Jacob, I thought it was interesting at Worlds, there was people... Well, honestly, when I saw it, I didn't think too much of it. But then I noticed a lot of talk online, and it makes sense, about a couple of plays that happened during the event where involving specifically Seth Manfield, where he basically was able to utilize the rules fairly, talk to the judge and all that, to take back a couple of plays. Did you watch this? Are you aware of this?
Yeah, I'm aware of two moments in the quarterfinals against Ken.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's all I noticed, too. One was involving... Quench. Yeah.
Quench on an uncounterable creature.
That's what it was. So he plays the cavern on the Spider-Man.
He doesn't play the Spider-Man. He plays the two-drop spider.
Oh, a two-drop spider. Yeah. And Seth goes to counter it, but then he realizes that it has cavern, and he asks if he can take it back.
One, I think, is crazy to think is even, like, close to bending the rules.
Okay.
In my opinion, like, he was really fast to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And to say, like, oh, he tapped his treasures and put the card face down is just, like, the thing that someone would tell me how magic worked when I was 9 years old, which is just not close to, like, how magic works at all anymore.
A practical and, magic, yeah.
Like, I don't even think, you know, if I was playing against Seth there, the pace at which he returned it, it wouldn't bother me at all that he goes, oh, wait, that can't be countered. Sorry, I'm not going to cast that spell. Like, it seemed like it was all kind of one breath of, like, I'm casting Quench. Oh, wait, no, I'm not. And that's just, like, you can't just hold people to casting their spells just because they, like, start doing it and then realize they shouldn't in the middle of, like, basically there was just clearly no priority passed. Like, he just wasn't done actually casting it.
Yeah, I totally agree. And there has to be some... That's obviously within the grace window, too, that any person would show their opponent, I think. Or you would hope or expect that people would show each other. And the other one, and maybe not have even been brought up, because the other one's a little bit worse. The other one is like he's with a Boomerang Basics, and it's in a different game, and he's really low in cards in library, so he like plays a Boomerang Basics targeting his own thing. And then while it's like sitting on the table still, he thinks about it and then realizes.
And he grabs a land from his hand and moves it to his graveyard off artist talent, to be clear.
Oh, gotcha. Okay, yeah, he goes to trigger his artist talent. And then he realizes like, oh man, I shouldn't do this. I'm going to run out of cards. And he asks if he could take it back.
Yeah.
And
so,
the judge allows it.
Yep. So my thoughts on this is that's not cheating. So anybody calling it cheating is crazy because like you can't call it cheating when you go asks a judge, can I do this? And the judge says yes. Like that's just 100%. Not cheating.
Yep.
I think maybe it's a little, I don't know the word. It's not unsportsmanlike, I would say either, but just like it's a little, maybe it's a little unsportsmanlike, I guess, to like ask a judge, you know, like it very much felt like he did it in that spot, I would say.
And he was like seeing if he could get out of it.
Yeah, and then realized, I'm in a deck. I need to bounce my own monument to Endurance so that I can replay it and have him lose 3 more life. Like, he realizes that within the middle of, like, resolving it, basically, because that's what he does, and he wins with 0 cards in his deck.
Mm-hmm.
So certainly, yeah, he started making a play, realized it was a mistake, and then asked if he can take it back. And if his opponent, you know, had something in response, there was enough time passed that I think Ken would have cast something in response. But... So he kind of learned.
So the difference here between the other one is that he did kind of gain a little bit of information. Very tiny amount, but certainly something from him because so much time had passed.
Yeah, what I'm most surprised about in that exchange is that he asked the judge and the judge instantly says yes and Ken doesn't say anything either.
Who did you...
I'm surprised it wasn't, you know, the judge says, I got to ask, or Ken's got to be like, I'm appealing that, you know? I mean, it's tough with the language barrier, but...
Yeah, that was my thought too. Like either Ken, I mean, when the judge says immediately yes, though, you kind of understand.
Yeah.
From Ken's perspective, but it is a bit strange. It you know, it makes you wonder if maybe like, okay, this is, you assume that this is allowed. And apparently if you look into the rules, the judge gets to determine if an action has been taken and basically nothing else has happened and the opponent hasn't acted or any sort, they get to decide just on discretion whether or not it can be taken back. And it makes you wonder maybe if for this tournament this sort of thing was allowed to happen, but maybe it shouldn't in the future. Someone brought up that someone brought up that there was a player in the finals of a Pro Tour once who would have won if they had like played their land before attacking with their Hazoret.
Yeah, so this wasn't the finals, but yeah, this was Pro Tour Arrow Devastation. It was just Yamunchan against Paulo, and he had lethal with Hazoret, just like activate Hazoret, deal 2 to your face, attack you, you're dead. And he just went to combat with Hazoret and tapped it, and Paulo's like, no, you have 2 cards in hand. And that means he missed the attack with Hazoret entirely. That actually, like, you can't get messed up on that anymore, partially because of that. Like, that exact example, if it happened again, the judge would be like, that was an illegal attacker declared, so let's rewind to that, to a moment where you have priority before you're declaring attackers, which therefore means you could just activate Hazoret.
Right. And, you know, someone brought up that maybe because of that, that's why the rule is the way it is now. But
yeah,
do you think it
another...
should be this way for like, the high... I mean, this isn't just... RCQ, this isn't just, obviously FNM, you'd let people take stuff back. RCQs, maybe you'd get sharked or whatever, but I mean, this is the highest level worlds. Do you think that these sorts of players like Seth should be held to a higher standard?
No, but I do think that there's kind of this gray area. So I think, like, if Ken was completely tapped out, I'd almost have no issue with what happened. But because Ken had some mana up, I do think to some extent some information was going to be gained. And I think it wasn't relevant. You know, I heard Edgar talk about this. The only, like, action that Ken could have done would have been to, like, kill Gran-Gran in response, which he probably would have done on his own turn. So, like, in actual reality, like, there's nothing Ken had. And I'm sure Ken, being a strong player, passing the turn in that spot, knows that Seth knows there's, like, nothing he's going to do with his 2 open mana. Because it's like, why wouldn't he just kill Gran-Gran before he starts his turn? And that's, like, the only instance in his deck.
But then you're sort of expecting the judge to understand all that.
Yeah. But I guess, yeah, that's the thing, is I've heard about cases like this where, like, and in modern it gets trickier where, like, and sometimes people bring up really good points where, like, somebody does something and says, can I take that back? And the judge is like, yeah, no information was gained. And then the opponent goes, like, that's not true. Like, I could have surgical'd his thing or something, you know? And that example of surgical is really funny because it's, like, always available to you.
Yeah.
But I've heard examples where the surgical would be meaningless, and I've heard examples where the surgical is, like, extremely relevant and, like, the correct play to do at that time. So it's actually, like, a great point, you know? Mm-hmm. If you were like, I'm going to reanimate my thing, and then you're like, never mind, I don't want to do that, then I'd be like, well, hold on. Like, you know I don't have surgical
you
now.
You just learned I didn't have surgical, yeah.
Yeah. Like.
Yeah, that's true. Okay. Okay. My perspective is to be ultra lenient, so, like, it's hard to put myself in those shoes, and I've also never played that high of a stakes of match before, so I don't know how I would act.
Yeah, I think judges' perspectives are also be ultra lenient, and I think they're even more lenient on feature matches.
Okay. Well, what do you think about that? Should they be more lenient on feature matches?
No, I don't think they shouldn't be, but I think that's literally like a human thing, right? Like,
right.
They don't want to be the guy to tell Seth Manfield, no, you lose.
You lose, like, sucker. Yeah. And they're remembered for that. All the Seth Manfield fans hate him. Yeah. Okay, well,
you don't want to be the bad ref, you know?
Yeah, I think in general, even at that high level, at the end of the day, we can look at the fundamentals that we're, like, playing a game and we want it to be enjoyable for people. And just because you're going to get a big paycheck doesn't mean that, you know, this shouldn't be an enjoyable experience for you or whatever. I know Seth Manfield probably treats Magic like a job, but from the perspective of wizards and judges and all that, it's still kind of just a game, right?
Yeah, definitely. I think a lot of spots that take back is totally fine anyways. So I don't think it's really clear cut, but I could have believed that the judge could have said, like, if the judge said, like, no, that's staying, and then he loses, that also, you know, wouldn't have been outrageous to me.
Would have been reasonable.
It seems like it's kind of on the line.
Yeah. I think maybe they could tighten up the rules just a little bit for that specific thing, but we'll see.
Yeah, to like the land drop one, not that this is an example, but that's where a lot of this stemmed from. Just to like be clear, if you like play a land and you have nothing with landfall trigger, and you go like, I don't want to play that land, I'm taking it back and doing something else first or playing a different land.
Mm-hmm.
That like is totally within the rules now, because playing a land is not past priority. And your opponent has if your opponent didn't have priority, you can totally just take back your land drop now.
Yeah, like maybe you played, I mean, this really happened to me. I went and played Standard last night for fun, locals, and I was playing with the Teamer Lessons deck, and I had a bunch of Verges. And I realized that I needed to play a basic to get my green mana, and I had accidentally played a Verge, and then, of course, they let me take it back.
Yep.
But
yeah, no, so I actually know, I think, like, the key on-coverage example that got maybe the rules to the way they are now, it was the Players Tour in Phoenix that Corey Burkhart won in the top eight.
Mm-hmm.
Tommy Ashton was against Jacob Wilson, and Tommy was playing Bant Spirits. And he goes, turn one, Botanical Sanctum, one drop. Turn two, plays Glacial Fortress and tries to play a two drop. And mm-hmm. Jacob Wilson's like, your Glacial Fortress is tapped, and the judges upheld that.
Yeah.
But like Tommy had Hollowed Fountain in his hand and was just kind of like, this is literally like a misclick, you know? Like,
right. Yeah. Boy, it's so brutal when that happens too online, huh? Yeah, especially with that, it's like, he literally could have meant to grab the Hollow Fountain, but because they look similar or whatever.
Yeah, I also thought in that exact example that, like, if Tommy was like a Hall of Famer, like John Finkel or someone,
they would have let
the
him
judges might have just been like, that's okay, take it back. Like, it's also one of those, you know, we're all humans type of thing, but like,
we're all humans, we're all prone to nepotism to whatever degree. So, yeah, it's just going to be how it is.